Don't be silly. You're taking the fall.
My name is Stephen Nestor, and you're listening to Poets of the Tabloid Murder. Today we have with us Mark Haskell Smith, whose second book, Delicious, has just been published by Atlantic Monthly Press. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, glad to be here.
Mark, you've written a Polynesian noir. You've written about paradise with lots of trouble, and we don't really think about dark deeds going on in the Hawaiian Islands.
Oh, the Hawaiian Islands are full of all kinds of mischief and mayhem. That's part of the reason that I like to write about that. I love the sort of the blue sky and then kind of the evil underbelly.
Well, the blue, that the cerulean blue goes kind of red, goes well with blood red, does it not?
Exactly.
Okay, you've written a humorous book. It's written in quick episodes. And what we basically have is a convergence of about eight important characters. We got the plot revolves around a Las Vegas show business movie caterer who's trying to move into the business of the Hawaiians. He wants to do business on Hawaii, and he's got to break through get past the Hawaiian gods. He's got to get past the Hawaiian mafia, and first he's got to get past the barbecue pit.
That's right. You know, actually, a few years ago, I did a pilot for ABC Television, which was, they said, we want to do a hip, cool Hawaii 5-0, and for some reason they sent me, and I rode around with these police detectives, narcotics detectives, for a few weeks, and one of the stories that came out of it was an actual incident where a company in the movie business, although not catering, tried to move in on a Samoan family that has a monopoly there, and you know, basically, it was one of those things. They were unloading the equipment on the pier, and a motorcycle came up and shot and killed these guys and disappeared. And you know, broad daylight, all the Teamsters there, and nobody saw a thing.
Yeah,
and I thought, wow, I thought it was really fascinating how the Hawaiians protect their culture and protect each other.
Yeah, and one thing that's very prevalent in the book is that. It's kind of like the Hawaii you don't see from you know, Waikiki Beach, and that's, you know, the real Hawaiian Islanders who are kind of a little bit ticked off about all the tourists and about how their culture is being subjugated by McDonald's, and you know how they want, you know, Hawaii for the Hawaiians.
Yeah, and you know, there's some big serious movements there to like get back to natural foods that the Islanders eat because their bodies can't assimilate fried foods or fast foods, and also the schools are teaching Hawaiian language.
Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah, without junk food, there wouldn't have been the wild Samoan, that professional wrestler back in the 80s.
Or numerous sumos who work in Japan now.
Yeah. Yeah, who is that guy? I mean, he was real big news for a while. The Jesse something.
Yeah,
like that.
They call him Konoshiki or something like that.
Which means?
I don't know. It's Japanese. I don't know.
Okay.
It means really big Hawaiian guy.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you. Hey, you know, I just happened to do the New York Times crossword puzzle, and on Friday, you don't happen to do that crossword puzzle, do you?
No, and particularly not Friday. That's much too difficult for me.
Okay.
I could do Monday or Tuesday. But
okay, settle down there. Because number two down on Friday's New York Times crossword puzzle, the clue was occasion to cook in an emu. Is it pronounced emu? I-M-U.
Yeah.
Imu?
Yeah, emu.
Okay, and the answer was a four-letter word. And what was that four-letter word?
It would be luau,
guess. Thank you very much. That's right, you win. Well, cause the book begins with Sid and Wilson, two native Hawaiian Islanders, or they're building this gigantic barbecue pit.
Yeah.
And you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I don't want to give away too much, but basically in the plot, when the Las Vegas company tries to come and take over the monopoly that the Hawaiians have, there's sort of some complications, and the Las Vegas guy, businessman, resorts to hiring some hitmen. I don't know how much more I should say.
I know. He hires a couple of hitmen, and one of the hitmen, I'm just going to say, makes a really strange and quick exit from the plot and from reality.
one of the hitmen discovers his true mission in life and disappears.
Yeah, really. That's, without giving out, we really can't talk much about the book, can we? Without giving too much away. But you've got a lot of interesting characters here, and this book is definitely character driven. You've got Jack Lucy and his son Stanley. You've got Sid and Wilson and their nephew Joseph.
Joseph, yeah,
who goes through some changes.
He's sort of the lead character, I think, in the book.
Well, he's probably one of the more sane ones. He's very introspective. We know that because there's a very tricky question that's posed to him. I don't know whether you want to mention that. But it has to do with Francis and Chad, the gay film producers who are having a breakup of their union, wherein Francis gets a priapism from too much partying, and that causes...
Chemically-assisted priapism.
That causes problems, and that has something to do with Jack Lucy, who has a penile prosthetic, which just won't stop.
Well, it's those airbags that you can have inserted in your penis when you have when you're impotent, and theoretically you're supposed to be able to pump them up and get an erection, and then let them down when you're done, and his gets stuck.
Yeah, well, that causes a lot of problems, and it makes for a lot of interesting plot twists. But I think two of the most interesting characters are Walter Lano, who is a native Hawaiian Islander. He's also a high class pimp. And he seems to be a pretty nice guy. And a Japanese-American woman named Yuki, who is Francis's producer. And Francis can't stand this woman until she comes under the influence of Walter Lano, who kind of wants to turn her out and turn her into a girl in his quote-unquote stable. He suggests a makeover, and she comes out looking like, and I quote, a hip teenage boy or a DJ at a lesbian disco. It turns out that Lano finds androgynous sexy, and he falls in love, which makes for a happy ending in the story, which I kind of liked.
Well, every girl, I think, dreams of falling in love with a really nice pimp.
But he turns out to be not only a nice pimp, but he quits the business. He goes straight.
Well, love will change you. You know, that's one of the themes of it.
I know. If there's one thing we can learn from your book, Delicious, and love will change you.
If it doesn't kill you, it'll change you.
Yeah, I also liked your description of Thai food, provocatively pungent and confrontational. I did like that.
I'm glad you did. I love Thai food myself, so.
Yeah, okay, Mark, you're like a quote-unquote professional writer. You're not the guy who hit it big with one book. You've been doing this for a long time in a different venue. I mean, you've been writing hot scripts for TV and movie, and tell us how your odyssey of becoming a writer got started. A lot of people find that fascinating. They just don't know. A lot of people out there need a role model. You might not be it, but we want to hear your story anyway, okay?
I don't know how much of a role model I am, but, I was just a wide-eyed young boy from Kansas City who had a dream. And
Missouri or Kansas? Makes all the difference in the world,
That's very good. Actually, two blocks from the state line on the Kansas side.
Okay, thank you.
But clear that. I originally had gone to film school and have a master's degree in cinematography, and I thought I was going to be a cameraman. And I had lots of friends who were writers, and like Bill Condon, who wrote the Chicago, the musical. He wrote the movie version. He also wrote and directed Kinsey, which is this movie that came out. And he was like the first guy to say to me, "You're funny. You should try writing." And so kind of he just said, just sit down and start writing. Think of, his advice is really good, and this might be helpful for people. Is like he just said, pick a TV show you really like and do a fake version of it. And that sort of got me into it. And then I ended up going to New York where I took classes in playwriting at Playwrights Horizons and started writing screenplays there. And next thing I knew, a lawyer told me, get back to Los Angeles. We optioned one of your scripts to a producer.
And then you changed, went 180 and started writing novels, which seems to be like, it seems to be like the wolfbane of scriptwriting. Can't that kind of, change you into an artist forever once you knock off a 250-page novel?
I it's maybe. I mean, the thing is, I with Moist, which was my first book, you know, it was a story about basically a guy who works a delivery man for a pathology lab in Los Angeles, and one day a severed arm comes into the lab, and it's got this, and it's evidence for a crime from a crime scene. It's got an erotic tattoo on it, and he sort of falls in love with the woman in the tattoo, and as he's taking the arm to the police headquarters after it's been sort of drained and formaldehydized, he's kidnapped by the Mexican mafia who want the arm back, and he makes a deal with them to sort of, we'll find another arm, we'll swap it and tattoo it,
yeah,
and I'll deliver it if you introduce me to the woman who's in the tattoo.
Oh my God.
And so I wrote that, and I had that idea for that story, and I realized if I write it as a screenplay, everyone in Hollywood will go, well, that's, you know, that's nice.
Now, that could fit into that surreal, bizarre kind of thing that's happening right now with, like, the Quentin Tarantino, whatever he is doing. That could fit in with what he's doing, I think.
Yeah, but he's, you know, the only one who gets to do that right now. And so anyway, I thought, I don't want to get a script rejected by these people, so I'm going to try writing a novel. And I just sat down and made myself write it.
Well, we thank you very much. What did you find you had to make in terms of changes, if any, when it came to writing a novel and writing a screenplay?
Well, the novel writing is just so much more fun. I mean, you can really do whatever you want and follow these tangents, and I just found it really liberating.
In terms of keeping yourself entertained, I understand what you're talking about. You can just keep your own interest in the book just by writing it and through the act of creation and surprising yourself. But when do you know when we've gone a little bit too far? When do you know that you've got to rein yourself in and you know, maybe start over, do some serious editing, or maybe just, you know, chuck the project?
I don't know. I kind of have these internal, you know, breaks, and when they, and sometimes they'll hit, and I'll be like, no, come on, we can go further.
It's kind of, you have to have like that internal BS detector, I think. Like is that what Ernest Hemingway said?
You need
that thing too. It's like a little lump in the back of your neck, like right by your medulla oblongata. That kind of gives writers that ability to chuck out the garbage and keep the good stuff.
Yeah, you can tell when they and a lot of times you'll write it, and then I'll write, and then the next day I start, you know, first thing in the morning I go over what I did the day before, and when you can tell when they clank, you know, you can hear the lines hit the floor, and you're just like, oh, what was I thinking?
Well, what happens when you're, I mean, if you're, people have this conception, let's talk about Hollywood screenwriters for a minute, people have this conception that you're always busy, that you're always working on a script with 10 other people, and that if you're not in continual contact with people in this business, you know, you're dead. I mean, so is that true? And, you know, how did you balance that with having to disappear and be a hermit to write a novel?
You know, it's funny because there are times when you're writing a script, and particularly with television, where, you know, you're in a meeting with 10 other people or on a conference call with 10 other people, getting their notes and talking about things, but a lot of times, once you're sort of hired and you have a meeting and you talk about it, then you're kind of set off on your own, and you get like 12 to 20 weeks to do whatever you want, and no one really bothers you. And then once you turn it in, you know, then the calls come and the meetings come, and you're back in that kind of what they call development hell.
Uh-huh.
But like with I adapted Moist, my first book, DreamWorks bought the movie rights for the guys who produced American Beauty, and Barry Sonnenfeld is directing it, who did Men in Black and Get Shorty. And when I had my initial meeting with them, the president, then president of DreamWorks, Michael DeLuca, just said to me, he goes, well, keep it lurid.
Yeah, and you did.
that's all he wanted with the script, just keep it lurid.
And this is a PG show, so we really can't go into detail.
No.
But my name is Stephen Nestor. You're listening to Poets of the Tabloid Murder, and we're speaking with Mark Haskell Smith, author of Delicious, which has just come out by the Atlantic Monthly Press. Your first book was Moist. Your second book was Delicious. if you name your third Creamy, Betty Crocker's going to sue you for plagiarism.
I think it's going to be called Ripe.
Ripe, okay. Well, let me ask you a question. You go to Hawaii to work on Project A. It falls through, so you initiate and complete Project B. I mean, how much of what you work on or how much of what inspires you is determined by where you are? I mean, and if your location does, you know, kind of determine what you write about, when's the Hollywood noir novel coming out?
Well, I don't know. Delicious has it's about the film business, and some of the characters are people that I've met or worked with in the business. So there's a little bit of Hollywood in it, but I don't know if I'm going to do I just think it would be too frightening to do a true Hollywood noir.
Like a really thick and dense kind of Bruce Wagner take on the whole business. I mean, that's a whole genre. That's a genre that people love, from Jackie Collins to, name another trashy writer, please.
Danielle Steele?
Danielle Steele. You know, people love, this thing about Hollywood. And it doesn't have to be dirt on movie actors. It's just the way people operate when there's so much money and prestige and fame and glory and adulation and,
on power and
depravity at stake, We just love to hear it. We want something like Play It As It Lays, but we want it amped up a bit, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I once heard some statistic that almost $100 million a week is generated by movie, television, and the music business in this town. And so when you're playing with that much cash coming in, people get really weird.
I mean, especially when you take in consideration that, where the type of person and where they come from, people from all over are drawn to, Los Angeles and hoping to make it big as somehow in the movie business, and if they don't make it, the only alternative is to keep on going and jump in the ocean.
Exactly. there's whole layers of sort of Hollywood primordial ooze that, just is, I don't know what it is or where it comes from, but it's there.
Well, let me ask your take. I mean, let's talk about Hollywood novels, because I just find them so fascinating. I mean, I read The Day of the Locust, and I found it kind of a really, I didn't really enjoy it. The book to me was really kind of static. It didn't move around. There was nothing really. The dynamics of the plot really kind of, especially the quote unquote finale, really made me go to sleep. You want to comment on that, or am I...
People always reference that Day of the Locust and Nathaniel West as like the great Hollywood novel, but that was of a particular time, and that's really a novel more about like artistic frustration and
I think you're right.
The movie was really good, I thought.
I didn't see that. Who was that? Bruce Dern or something like that?
Not Kiefer Sutherland, his dad, Donald.
Oh, yeah.
Sutherland.
Oh, that's right, because I've got the paperback that came out right after the movie came out. So, his picture's on the back. So, it's got a couple stills from the movie.
Yeah, the movie was really good. But I think the Hollywood novel is tough. And, I think maybe Michael Tolkien did it best with The Player.
Right, right. There's another one that came out, and I have a copy. And I can't remember the name of the book or the author, so I just might as well drop this end of the conversation right now and move on. It was pretty good. It was about the people in development and all the backstabbing that goes on, and how people are trying to claw their way past like the middle manager level of work in Hollywood studios. I thought it was pretty fascinating. It was pretty. All Hollywood movies are. All Hollywood books are dark. There's just no happy ending books. Everybody's a loser. They're really, really dark and sarcastic. So
yeah, and really, it's such a happy, fun place that I don't know where it gets that rap.
Ah, shucks.
Golly.
Yeah. So listen, what's your next project? Are you going to return to the big money world, as they say? Are you going to continue to toil in obscurity and have to talk to me?
I'm going to do both. Okay. I actually enjoy toiling in obscurity, but you know, then I've got kids in private school, so.
Oh, you are such a Hollywood screenwriting slattern.
I know, but right now, actually, as we speak, Delicious is out to the studios with an actor named The Rock attached to play the lead role.
Right. Yeah, we've heard of him.
Yeah. You'd be surprised how many Hawaiian actors there are in town.
So let me see. The Rock is going to play Joseph, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay, Joseph, the hero of the book. Joseph, we have to say, in that little section of the denouements you had there, he kind of packs up and he leaves the Hawaiian Islands, but I think people can know that. We won't
believe it. People can get that. It's, you know, the idea is he's actually the hero of the story, who is a guy who just wants, he's a really talented chef, he's a co-owner of the catering business, and he finds himself caught in a vortex of insanity. And at one point, the only way offered out for him is when the gay producer says, well, if you sleep with me, maybe we can work something out.
All right, well, that causes a lot of problems, and we don't want to give too much away.
We don't want to give too much away, but, you know, I'm really looking forward to the actor who gives that line to The Rock.
Okay, hey, he did play a gay guy in Be Cool, right? I haven't seen that movie. Is that any good?
That movie, it's terrible.
It didn't live up to its expectations.
So no, it didn't live up, very well put. I mean, The Rock is great in it, and actually Vince Vaughn is very funny in it. But, you know, Get Shorty is such a good movie.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
I had really high expectations for it. I think a lot of people did.
Well, let's go on to something else. How does the creative process work for you? I know that some people can get inspiration in the most unlikely places. You got it in the Hawaiian Islands after a shootout. Okay, but other people get it in more Catholic ways. They get it, you know, for instance, they might come up with a title of a story. They might see an image somewhere. They might think of, you know, a fragment of an image, you know, a little mini haiku, and next thing you know, they've got 250 pages. But how does the creative process work for you? You wake up in the morning, you need an idea, you need something to work on. I mean, do you go back to your quotable Mark Haskell Smith notebook that you have, or you just start afresh? I mean, how does it work?
I have those notebooks. Well, you know, when I start out, you always need to find that, like, little kernel of whatever it is, whether it's an image of something or someone. And, like, with Moist, the idea was, I was thinking, what if you had some kind of biodegradable evidence? And that sort of led me to this idea of a severed arm that's the prime evidence in a crime scene. And everything just kind of built out of that.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I always try to think of something that's like, you know, it has to grab you and it has to be interesting, and particularly like images that are really strong, like my new novel that I'm working on now is set in Thailand, and the main image was this idea of it was Ozzy Osbourne at the beach
No.
in Thailand.
That is a little odd. Is Ozzy making an appearance in this book?
Well, no, but it's about a guy. The storyline for that is about a guy who was a bass player in Metallica or a really major rock star who's on holiday with his wife, and she's kidnapped and by bandits. And when he tries to pay the ransom, Homeland Security and the Thai government won't let him give the ransom because they think the people are terrorists, and you can't. It would be a violation of the Patriot Act to aid and abet a terrorist organization. So he has to figure out a way. You know, this sort of 50-year-old, overweight, totally pampered guy has got to figure out a way to save his wife from pirates in a mangrove swamp.
Is this a comedy?
It is a comedy.
No, it sounds like one. Everybody has the capacity to be serious, so on and so forth. I mean, do you find that you're wired to be not a comedy writer, to be a humorous writer? I mean, is that something you won't get away from? Is that your world, your worldview, or how does it work for you?
Well, you know, it's funny. a few years ago, I adapted this book called Gangland about the John Gotti's arrest and the investigation by the FBI for Columbia Pictures. And when I turned the script in, which I thought was like the most serious, you know, this script is gonna, you know, win me an Academy Award. I was like, this thing is really good. And I turned it in, and the president of Columbia called me and was like, we don't want a comedy. I was just like,
oops.
Then I realized, oh, okay, this is what I do.
Yeah, I just can't help myself.
I think it's funny. So
what about nonfiction work? I mean, do you ever want to take a rest and say, well, I'd like to do 10,000 words for a magazine on a subject that I find that's of interest to me? I can really stretch out with it. You know, I can also put my own little I can do the Tom Wolfe, Truman Capote, Gay Talese, John McPhee kind of twist on it, and make a little art at the same time. Is that an option you would pursue?
God, it just sounds like so much work, doesn't it? You got to like tell the truth, find out facts.
Well, it'd be kind of fun. I mean, if you never find yourself, let's see, the Moviola, 10,000 words by Mark Haskell Smith.
I'm sure I could put everyone, instead of sleeping pills, read this article. No, I haven't been drawn to that, but then again, no one's ever offered me that or approached me about it. So,
well, you gotta make your own luck. I think it might be something you want to look into.
Oh, thanks.
For me.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much. So you're working on novel number 3.
Correct.
And when is that coming out?
Oh, I don't know. I gotta finish it.
For crying out loud! I was just like, I was just about to wait by the mailbox the way you were talking before.
No, I'm only about a third of the way through.
And how does the creative process work for you? I mean, are you writing? Do you write and then revise? Do you write the whole book then revise? Or you just revise passages, or how does?
I revise every day. Like I go back over what I did the day before and I rewrite it and I rewrite it and then I move on and, I'm one of those guys. I get up at 6 in the morning and drink too much coffee and start nitpicking myself.
So basically you kind of have like the finished product is following you into the next day's work kind of.
Yeah, you hope. Well, what happens is, like, the first, 50 pages are really, really good because you've just worked them so much, and then the rest of it is, like, needs a little polish, and by the time I turn it to my agent, she's like...
Is that why nothing really happens until, like, the last two-thirds of the book? Is that why all the good information comes out then, or is that just, like, a mystery convention? Oh, silly me. But anyway, so when this third book gets written, do you go back to screenwriting, or what is it going to be?
I'm
your fans want to know.
My fans want to know. Well, my fans, I should tell them that the screenwriting business is not as much fun as it used to be, because the movie business is fundamentally changing. I mean, all you have to do is look at the theaters, and you see sequels and remakes and remakes of sequels.
So there's basically no new product.
And it's really, most of the people that I know in this town, and my agents included, are very frustrated because it costs so much to make a movie and it costs so much to market a movie that the studios are afraid to put out anything that's not a sure thing. Like, they know people will go see The Ring 2, and they know people will go see Scooby-Doo 3.
My kids might, but not me. I would definitely see The Ring 2, but isn't that what this whole independent movie revolution was about? That kind of got big too. Do it yourself, and take your Super 8 or your little movie camera, go out and then make the Blair Witch Project, for crying out loud.
Right. Well, and every now and then someone catches what they call lightning in a bottle. But if you do, the thing is, like, what people don't really know is that you have to have a theater that'll show it. And of all the theaters in America, there's 52 slots for independent movies.
That's right. And there's like that. We forget that you have to find somebody to show the movie.
Right.
We forgot
and,
about,
And there's at the Sundance Festival, what they got, like 2,000, you know, entries? And maybe two of, or three of those movies will fill one of those 52 slots. I mean, it's really hard.
Well, it's always something to hope for. But anyway, yeah. you know, Mark, we've got to say goodbye now.
Oh.
I know. It's nice having you on the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Well, you know, well, let us know when the next book comes out, and we'll have you back.
I will.
Okay, great.
Since I've already pitched it, I've explained it all.
Oh, I know. That's why we did that. We're getting the word out early. Again, thank you. My name is Stephen Nestor, and you're listening to Poets of the Tabloid Murder. We've been speaking with Mark Haskell Smith, author of Delicious, an Atlantic Monthly Press publication. And stay tuned to WHUS for some fine public affairs coming right up.